Okay, let me just start, because I am at ITP, so let me say a few words. First of all, we work in the following limit. Number of dimensions, 4, number of colors, 3, number of supersymmetric charges, 0, number of flavors, 3. So it's just something I want to say, that we live in the real world. And what we know about the real world, that essentially the symmetry is such that we do not have any interesting objects like domain walls, strings, monopoles, or whatever, and we know that for quite some time. However, in the same nice theory, in the standard model, where you have dense matter, situation could be very different. And actually, fortunately, Krishna already discussed CFL phase in big detail, so I don't have to repeat many things which he discussed, but nevertheless, let me say few important things about the phase. So essentially, the general properties are such that many different symmetries are broken. First of all, color gauge group is completely broken in this phase. Yes, I am not going to discuss temperature at all. So just, I am living here, so I don't want to discuss something what's happening up there. So I'm talking about this part. It depends. So the right one. So we definitely know, and Krishna already discussed it, that many different symmetries are broken. And what is the just most important part for me, that many U1 symmetries are broken, symmetries like baryon charge, axial charge, and I discuss different charges later on. So, and let me remind you that the standard idea is the following, that essentially you do have a condensation, and all degrees of freedom, which are just pseudo-Galston or Galston bosons, they're hidden just in this exponent. And please do not confuse all this pi, k, eta prime with our real eta prime, k, and pi. They're just definitely very different in different phases, because just eta prime could be very, very light and
same quantum numbers.
Correct, same quantum numbers, but nevertheless,
right.
different particles.
The
yeah, I agree. That's right. Exactly the reason why people use. Okay, so let me.
Different f pi's.
Different f pi's. Just everything is different, because we live in a different phase. Okay, so let me just show the picture again, which many people already saw, that essentially I'm talking about exactly this part. Okay, and another interesting phase, which I will discuss also, let me remind you what again Krishna discussed already. So essentially I want to discuss CFL and K-naught condensation, and so essentially it so happened that when strange quark is large enough, in this case sigma it is not just 1 1 1, but something else, and we know roughly speaking what is something else. So it would be very, very different phase, not very different, but actually there is an extra k naught condensation. And what is important for me, it would be that there is a one new Galston mode here, and this new Galston mode means that essentially you have new kind of topological vortices. Okay, so essentially I mentioned everything which I need to know, and now let me discuss the most important part, and this is some kind of review of topological defects which we definitely know exist in such kind of CFL phase. So first of all, there is a just U1 symmetry, which is related to the spontaneously symmetry broken phenomena with baryon charge. Definitely you do have global vortices, and they are very, very similar to what you have actually in helium. Besides that, U1 asymmetry is also spontaneously broken because of the condensate, And definitely it is explicitly broken because of instantons. Fortunately, I can do everything I want with instantons because actually they are suppressed. I can do any calculations I want. And the coefficient is very, very small. So everything is under control.
That's in the high density limit.
High density limit, that's correct. So I'm talking about high density limit right now. Yeah, just the... Thomas is not here.
One of the things which Thomas did was to extend the instanton calculation.
And I asked my student to do the same, yeah.
And you find quite large instanton effects down at,
About 500 MeV, I agree, it's very large. At 1 GeV, where everything is under control.
Fine. So you're at a mu of 1 GeV.
So essentially 1 GeV, in this case, I can do my calculations, and there is a very interesting phenomena, which actually I want to discuss. So, but because actually we do have all these Galston modes, which have extra symmetries, some kind of discrete symmetries, and there are not only vortices, but so-called domain walls, and I want to discuss these domain walls later on. Okay, if you have CFL plus K naught, in this case, there is extra symmetry, which is U1 symmetry, related to the K condensation. In this case, again, you have some explicit spontaneous violation, so you have Galston mode, and you have explicit violation of this symmetry related to the weak interaction proportional to the Fermi constant. And in this case, again, because the same reason, you have domain walls. There is one more interesting phenomena here. Actually, such kind of things we definitely do not observe somewhere in the standard model, but people discuss similar things in cosmology in different extensions. But there is one more interesting stuff, that essentially vortices in this phase are such that actually symmetry is not restored. So it could be very interesting core, and it is something which actually people observed in helium-3 in B phase. Say again, please.
1 GeV temperature.
No.
If I at 1 GeV temperature, I can't talk about chaos, which is too dense.
No, I'm not talking about temperature, sorry.
I know, but you think it's still talk about density in order 1 GeV.
No, right, if I'm talking about U1A, in this case it is a 1 GeV. If I'm talking about, let's say, baryon vortices, or vortices related to K naught, in this case, I can definitely discuss 500 MeV easily, because in this case, everything is under control. And the only what I want to know that this is exactly the phase which is realized.
These are not the chaos of the vacuum, these are the chaos of the CFL phase. These are Goldstone boson of infinitely dense matter. It's an infinite density. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why? Because chiral symmetry is broken, so you have Goldstone boson. There's a collective modes of this phase. Yeah, as always in the vacuum.
Yeah, it's just, I'm talking about something which already Krishna presented, so I don't want to spend my time to discuss all these Galston modes. So I assume that you know what's happening. You have exactly the same 8 or 9 Galston modes, and they can be parameterized in this way. And what I want to study topological defects which are related to such kind of Galston modes. And in this case, I definitely can apply effective Lagrangian approach because I actually very light and I can do actually some calculations. Okay, as you see, there are many different topological defects here. So essentially what I decided to do the following, that no way I can discuss all this stuff in details. So what I decided to do, I decided to discuss domain walls and I decided to discuss very interesting phenomena here. Here, such that symmetry is not restored. So in core, actually is not trivial. Usually core in vortices goes to zero, but here it doesn't.
And in the helium-3B case, what?
Okay, that too, so just...
Are you going to talk about that later?
No, okay. Not about helium, but I'm talking about... No, I'm talking about my...
I'll ask you now. So in the helium-3B case, which vortex is it and what happens in the core? What is the actual?
There is a Z2 symmetry in helium 3b. So essentially, usually people assume that what happens in the core, that symmetry is restored, it just goes to zero. But it turns out that actually in helium 3b, vortices are such that inside you have a different phase, the condensation of a different phase. Huh? Yeah.
Which phase is it in the core? Is it A phase?
Not exactly. No, it is B phase also has symmetry Z2.
So what is the phase in
the core? It is a different symmetry, the same B phase.
So,
discuss later because I can tell you exactly what's happening in this case. And when I talk to condensed matter people, they say, oh, it is something very similar what we know in helium 3b. So, but and they explain, but now I have to just. Okay. It's very similar, but the reason why I'm talking about this here, because essentially I can give some kind of explicit calculation when and how it happens.
It is exactly.
Okay, so as I said that I want to discuss just two one type of domain walls and one type of vortices. Just otherwise, I have no time to discuss all options, all possibilities. So let me discuss first of all just U1A domain walls. As I mentioned, that U1A is a symmetry of QCD on the classical level. It is definitely broken spontaneously. It is broken explicitly by instantons. Eta prime is a phase of this condensate. This is something we I already mentioned. And let me remind you just standard transformation properties for eta prime. Right now, I'm talking about eta prime part only. So for eta prime, the way how I transform quarks is just alpha gamma 5, so it is a singlet transformations, and in this case my sigma transforms in just in this non-trivial way, and eta prime is defined in such a way that eta prime gets some kind of shift. In this case, low energies, I definitely can describe this mode in a very simple way, and this is definitely what people already know, and plus small instanton contributions. Now, let me relate this Lagrangian, this small instanton contribution with so-called theta parameter. You know that just like in the standard model, if you know what is the theta dependence in your fundamental theory, in your low energy theory, it's better to say, in this case, you immediately know how eta prime comes into the game in low energy effective Lagrangian. And the reason is very simple, because from Oort identities, what we know the following, that the only combination which is allowed in description, it's exactly this description in the standard model. And the reason is very simple. When you make the chiral transformations, you know exactly how measure transforms under the chiral transformations, and it makes exactly shift theta to theta plus alpha. So this is the only combination which is allowed. So this is a very, very old Witten-Veneziana discussion. But what is important that in CFL phase, it's exactly the same. The only combination which comes into the game, it's exactly this combination. So essentially, the point is the following. If we know what is the theta dependence because of the instanton contributions, we immediately know what is the theta dependent, eta prime contribution to this instanton. Okay, and let me say a few words about the specific instanton contributions in large mu limit. That in this case, we know for quite a long time that essentially all these problems related with the large instantons, which actually Thomas discussed yesterday, they are not there. Because essentially they are suppressed at large mu. So in this case, we can do whatever we want. We can just exactly do all calculations. We know instanton measure. This is exactly Toft measure. We know effective Lagrangian because of the zero mods. And the only what we have to do, we have to just take average with respect to expectation value in our CFL phase. And what is the most important part is the following, that essentially you see that phi here automatically appears exactly as it should be. Because essentially phi it is exactly nothing but the phase of this condensate. Phi it is exactly the phase of sigma, eta prime phase. So phi is eta prime.
Phi is eta prime.
Phi is eta prime with f eta prime specifically normalized.
We have an extra power of phi. What's the phi square of u?
Where?
We have an integral of u r.
Yeah.
And then we have this factor which is the volume.
Yeah. This one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. It could be actually for su2. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. This is just the old transparencies for two flavors. Yes. That's exactly the reason why I presented the results.
For you didn't whip it off the projector quick enough.
Okay, for two flavors and three flavors. I started that I do everything for three flavors, but nevertheless, actually, I mentioned two flavors as well. Anyhow, you can do all these calculations. The most important part is the following, that actually it's exactly what you expected. You have exactly this cosine. And this is a theta dependent, this is a eta prime field. And you can actually find out that for relatively large mu, let's say definitely larger than 1 GV, all calculations are under control. But what is the most important part is the following, that essentially, now effective Lagrangian here is really very nice. It is a Sine-Gordon model. And this coefficient is calculated. It is calculated using instanton calculations. And we know the theory very well. It is a Sine-Gordon model. We definitely know that in two dimensions, there is such kind, some kind of soliton. In four dimensions, it is nothing but domain wall. So domain wall transition essentially corresponds to the following, that it is a transition between point phi equals 0 and phi equals 2 pi. They are exactly the same points. So there is a non-trivial interpolation between this point and this point. And in two-dimensional physics, people would say it is a soliton. We definitely know it does exist there. And in our case, it is a domain wall, and we can calculate domain wall tension. So it is an energy per area. And it can be calculated everything in terms of actually original QCD parameters. So in this case, after that, you say the following. OK, but in two-dimensional physics, you definitely know that if such kind of soliton in two dimensions, for sure, it is an absolutely stable object. And here is a few remarks. So essentially, if these points were very different. In this case, it would be some kind of ferromagnetic, and it would be absolutely stable object. You have spin up, spin down, and definitely you have some kind of domain wall. These states are very different, and no way you can actually remove this domain wall from your physics. If it is formed, it will exist, it will stay forever. Second remark, if phi, it is the only degrees of freedom. In this case, again, it is an absolutely stable object. It's exactly what we have in two-dimensional Sine-Gordon model. It is just model where you have soliton, and soliton, it's absolutely stable object. However, we essentially have not two-dimensional theory, and we have something much more complicated. Essentially, the way how we derive this effective Lagrangian, we integrated out heavy degrees of freedom. Now we have to understand what's happening with these heavy degrees of freedom and what role do they play. So essentially, this object, it is not stable, but metastable. OK, let me just we integrated all heavy degrees of freedom related to the gap delta. But let me just show what potential actually looks like before you integrate it out heavy degrees of freedom. So essentially, my previous picture, it's exactly this Goldstone mode. Actually, it is a little bit tilted because M eta prime is not zero. It's not exactly Goldstone. But this angle is really very small, and M eta prime is really very, very small. So previous potential, it was exactly you live in just in it. You go around the circle. So from phi to 0 to 2 pi.
So the height of your previous bump was controlled by M eta prime.
Correct. So essentially, and this height, it is nothing but M eta prime. It's very, very small. And OK, so let me just show the previous picture. So my previous picture, phi 0 to pi, it's exactly the picture which corresponds to this phi part.
The small parameter in your approach is the ratio of eta prime mass to the gap, right?
Yeah. This yeah. This is a
maybe in, a small
correct.
Part, I mean,
correct.
At a GeV it is.
A GeV even more than that. Yeah, it is a small actually at GeV. Parametrically it's small. So I'm talking about right now about parametrical part. So essentially but nevertheless definitely in quantum field theory we definitely understand that. My domain wall corresponds to the following path. It is not stable. In quantum field theory, you have finite barrier. So definitely, the state would be metastable. And you can easily actually calculate what is a lifetime, because it is a just standard type of semi-classical calculations. And semi-classical calculations, again, is under control, because all parameters are such that you can use semi-classical calculations. A, it is just exactly instanton contribution, and way is small. In this case, lifetime is really very, very large. So just the only remark I want to make that essentially, the very similar picture takes place in large NC limit in QCD. And the reason why M eta prime is small there, because it's just in large NC limit is small. So the very, very similar picture in large NC. And actually, I argued that even NC equals 3, the same picture persists, but simply here would be approximately 1/2 numerically from this one. But nevertheless, it's just very similar picture.
Are you going to explain that the vortices are bounded, go around the domain wall?
Yeah.
Okay,
now. Yeah, as I said, it's just a good question, and it's exactly what I was trying to explain. Usually, domain walls in ferromagnetic system looks like that. You have spin up, spin down, and you have some kind of domain wall which interpolates between two completely different states. This is a typical domain wall, and you can do nothing with this domain wall. It exists forever. But now I'm talking about different situation. Let's consider Sine-Gordon model. Phi equals 0 and phi equals 2 pi physically are exactly equivalent points. So what it means the following, that I'm not talking about the way how I formed this object. But nevertheless, what it means the following, that essentially you have some kind of domain wall such that if you go through the main wall, phi does not remain the same 0. It becomes 2 pi. So in two-dimensional physics, do you agree that, for example, if you have cosine phi, and you have d mu phi, kinetic term, and in this case, you definitely know this Lagrangian does support solitons. And you are not surprised with that. Phi equals 0, phi equals 2 pi. It's exactly the same point. But nevertheless, there is an interpolation between them. And actually, these degrees of freedom are extremely important in physics. They are solitons. And they are definitely there in physical spectrum. If you just miss such kind of transitions, and you would say, OK, I want to quantize my quantum field theory right here, it's exactly what you do. In this case, you would miss such kind of solitons. You would get wrong spectrum in your theory. Yeah, exactly. It is a soliton when you just x and y direction are absolutely irrelevant, and this is a soliton just in two dimensions. Okay, now, so essentially, let let me just, so this is a, something about domain walls. And now, let me discuss something about vortices. Okay, typical vortices, because we already mentioned U1B is spontaneously broken. U1A is also spontaneously broken. You immediately know that pi 1 is non-trivial. You immediately get vortices. And these vortices are actually, in some sense, quite trivial. They are very similar to what you have in helium. And you can calculate string tension or easily because you know all parameters in your effective Lagrangian. And with log accuracy, actually, you know the string tension quite well. And as usual, because it is a global, not local vortex, it definitely has infrared divergence, as it's supposed to be. And these are essentially, it's nothing but some kind of what is the typical size between two different vortices, or it might be related, if this vortice is related to somehow to domain walls, what is the size of domain wall widths. The most important part of all these vortices people discussed is the following, that actually symmetry is restored here. And this is an absolutely typical situation. And this is exactly the reason why phi equals zero here, that is not well defined. So it's exactly the way how you construct all these vortices. Okay, let's just, vortices which Krishna discussed, I don't know how to construct. He may have some idea, so I don't know about this type of vortices. And let me say that essentially, actually, there are two, even few very interesting things about this vortices, U1B vortices, because it is just not very, just questions like that. Do they carry angular momentum or things like that, U1B or U1A? It is quite non-trivial, actually, questions, because you can actually demonstrate that if you have just absolutely trivial Lagrangian, which I discussed, dB phi square, in this case you calculate energy momentum tensor and you don't get anything. But nevertheless, this problem can be resolved and we understand the resolution of this problem, and it turns out that U1A, they don't carry any angular momentum, U1B they do. But because actually it is understood, I don't want to discuss this part. And I want to discuss something else. I want to discuss different type of strings, which are less trivial. And I want to discuss K-strings. So now, yeah.
You made that sound very mysterious, but it, I mean, the reason that a U1A vortex doesn't carry there are numbers, it has a left, you know, the left-hand
that's true.
On one way and the right-hand corks are going on the other way. So there's an axial current flow.
But now, yeah, in terms of physics, everything is clear. But nevertheless, if you just, if you mention in this case, let me explain, let me formulate the question, which was formulated a few years ago. And just let me answer.
I know this.
You know the answer.
I know this story. You don't have to you,
it. Okay.
If you want to skip it for everybody else.
Yeah, because essentially it is understood, but nevertheless, it is quite non-trivial in relativistic system to have a vortex which carries angular momentum. And we know, we are happy that U1B vortices, they do carry angular momentum. You understand physics, what is behind. I understand in terms of formal Lagrangian, how it happens. So yes, we are both happy. But nevertheless, it is in the relativistic system, it is not very trivial part. Okay, now I want to discuss some vortices which actually not so trivial, not so simple. So in CFL plus K naught phase, as I mentioned, that sigma, it is not just 1, 1, 1, but it has extra phi, it has extra one Goldstone mod.
You're not going to say that these U1 axial vortices form the boundaries of your U1 axial domain wall?
Yeah. vortex and anti-vortex.
Yeah, right.
That's just true. Opposite. In this case, you have exactly
true. Vortex, a domain wall is bounded by a vortex.
Yeah, exactly true. And it's exactly what's happening with K strings as well. Because
you explain this example.
No, essentially, I can explain. I didn't prepare actually transparencies, but yeah, I want to explain what's happening with K strings and K vortices. And yes, I will. So yeah, but you got it right. So
the way that your domain wall decays is by nucleating a loop of
loop inside.
A loop
so if you
eats it up.
Correct. So but essentially the way how I am talking about domain wall decay, it is a nucleation. But if strings are there, string and anti-string, in this case it would happen really very fast. Domain wall disappear and strings they immediately annihilate each other. If you have domain walls. Yeah, that's correct.
But aren't you saying isn't there hundreds that if you have a string you must have a domain wall that comes out of it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is not necessarily true. For example, U1B does not have
domain. For the U1 axial string.
For U1 axial string, yeah. There is a domain wall and there is a string. For sure, but for example, U1B, you do have string, you do not have domain wall.
Right, yeah, right.
Why is it so? Because there is no explicit violation of the baryon symmetry. But once you have some kind of explicit violation, in this case it would be some kind of cosine phi, and in this case you immediately get domain walls. Yes, that's correct. Okay, so let me discuss the K strings, which is actually less trivial in terms of construction. So again, let me skip all the just general discussion about this phase. And the most important part, and actually I try to be very simple, is the following, that K naught is condensed, and all parameters actually in this effective Lagrangian are known. As I said, cosine theta can be related to delta and f pi, and lambda in term can be written in terms of mu effective, and mu effective it is again expressed in terms of ms and mu. So essentially we know all parameters here. And few important things about this this symmetry, that U1, it is not U1B, it is not U1A, it is U1 hypercharge, is spontaneously broken, and phi, which is just right here, again, it is a new, it is the same phi, but nevertheless, it is a different Goldstone mode. So once you have symmetry, because I use the same phi each time I discuss.
It's
the same Greek letter.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry. The same Greek letter phi, but nevertheless, it's completely different field. So I'm just.
The Greeks didn't give us enough letters.
Yeah, unfortunately. Okay, so essentially, again, pi 1 is not trivial. And you would expect that vortices are certainly there. And again, you go exactly in the same direction what people usually do. You write down equation. You definitely see that such kind of string exists. This profile function again can be calculated because we know all these parameters. String tension again can be calculated, and the same string tension, roughly speaking, has the same order of magnitude. Again, you have infrared cutoff, and this infrared cutoff because it is a global string. And again, symmetry is restored in the core by just exactly what you have for this K naught. So in this CFL plus K naught, you definitely have such kind, the same kind of things which I discussed before. Nevertheless, there are a few questions, and let me just try to go and formulate these questions, because I want to discuss some kind of symmetry here. What's happening here? Mu equals Md. It is a very, very nice limit. It is just isotopical limit, and we we assume that it is a very nice limit. But in this case, you immediately say that you don't have SU1, which is broken, but you have SU2, which is spontaneously broken. And you immediately say that strings cannot exist. They cannot be stable. Topology is trivial. So what we see the following, that if mu is not equal md, k-string can be constructed, they're stable. If mu equals md, they're unstable, just topological argument. So essentially, what I want to understand, what's happening when we change this parameter md minus mu, and what happens when md minus mu is exactly our physical 3-MeV number. So essentially, just I want to formulate in the following. In order to answer this question, I have to understand not only topology, I have to understand what does it mean that string is unstable. So let's try to see what does it mean string is unstable when mu equals md, when topology says that essentially you don't have strings. But nevertheless, I go exactly in the standard way. I say now I want to include both k plus and k naught strings. I again construct exactly k naught strings in the same way as I did before. I have this profile function, and now I want to study stability of the string. So we definitely know that because k naught string is stable by itself, in this case I don't have to actually take into account all these fluctuations about this delta k naught. But nevertheless, I want to take into account fluctuations related to the k plus direction in the functional space. And you're doing just absolutely standard semi-classical calculations here, and k plus again can be expanded in just in the standard Fourier series. And I keep again only the smaller, the lowest contribution. Again, it corresponds to number m which equals to zero. And the problem is reduced to some kind of Schrödinger equation with operator which is expressed in terms of your profile function. As usual, the most important part is the following. So once this problem is reduced to such kind of Schrödinger problem, this profile function is defined in such a way that this is from 0 to 1, so potential, effectively, it is attractive potential. And what we know about this attractive potential is the following. Just we know that in one-dimensional physics, we definitely have bound state, which is even for arbitrary small potential. The same for in two-dimensional physics, we always have bound state. It's exactly what Landau says in his textbook. In three dimensions, it is not the case. In three dimensions, bound state may not exist. But our case corresponds to two-dimensional, effectively two-dimensional case. So essentially, what we know from topology, it is an absolutely trivial statement that in such a potential, there is a bound state with a negative energy eigenstate such that you have instability. So this is exactly explicit manifestation of the instability which you know from the very beginning from the topological arguments. So string is unstable, and this is...
How does it unwind? How does it unwind itself? What happens?
Exactly what happens, okay, it just let me just go, because essentially to answer on this question, it's better to have a limit when MD is not equal to MU,
sure,
and see what happens when you go from MD to MU. So in this case, I can answer on this question, and you'll see what's happening actually. Okay, now, now I want to explicitly break this SU2 symmetry such that you have exactly the same term, plus you have term which is proportional to MD minus MU. Again, everything what you know, all these coefficients are actually can be explicitly calculated from effective Lagrangian. So it is an explicitly term which explicitly breaks the symmetry. Again, you can repeat all these calculations I discussed before, but now the Schrödinger equation, it is not just Schrödinger equation with the operator which has negative mod, but it is a Schrödinger equation with O plus epsilon, and epsilon, it is extremely small, it is a proportional to MD minus MU, it is definitely very, very small, but nevertheless non-zero. So essentially, the problem is reduced to the following, that study your eigenvalue problem, find out actually your bound state energies, and it is definitely always negative. But In order to have instability for the string, it is not simply E must be negative. It is E plus epsilon must be negative. Epsilon, it is small number, but it is a positive small number. So essentially, not arbitrary small negative potential gives you instability, but you have some kind of situation when it is absolutely stable and it is unstable. So essentially, the problem is reduced to the solution of this equation, where E it is just eigenvalue. And this solution does not exist actually for arbitrary weak potential, but nevertheless, it does exist for relatively large potential. So let me call this relatively large critical theta. So, sure.
I recall very well by one space dimension, an arbitrarily always negative potential.
Yeah.
I thought it's a little bit more tricky.
In two dimensions, it's all. Okay, yeah. Yeah, essentially in two dimensions, it always has also negative mode, but in one dimension it is a proportional to u square if u it is a very weak. But in two dimensions it is exponentially small, e minus 1 u. So if lambda, let's say, and just let me. It's an absolutely trivial part. So if lambda is a very small potential, in this case, bound state in a one-dimensional problem, it is a lambda square. So lambda is small, but bound state is very, very small. But it is a 1D. And in 2D, E even much smaller. So it is exponentially small, but nevertheless, it's still there. So you always have. In two dimension, it is less simple argument, but actually I presented the argument why you immediately see that. So essentially, you just solve the problem with a trivial well, and after that you say that if for the trivial well you do see negative mode, in this case even potential which is not well, but nevertheless something like that, you can just put well like that, and you say that this potential even more negative than this one. And if you know that for this one it exists, for this one it definitely exists. So essentially, you definitely know that if for such some kind of system in two dimensions, there is an always bound state, you definitely know even for much more complicated potential, you always have such kind of bound state. Anyhow, let me call this parameter critical theta, which corresponds to the following situation.
That's like a variational argument also. Sort of variational argument.
Yeah, it's some kind of a variational argument. That is, it's exactly what actually. No, what?
Is it in Landau's book?
No, it's in my paper. But nevertheless, it has been known, let's say, for 50 years, or I don't know, for many, many years. So people knew that in two dimensions you always have bound state. absolutely correct. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So essentially, let me define theta critical. It is exactly the parameter where you do have the solution of this equation, such that when potential becomes lower, in this case, you definitely have bound state and you have instability. Otherwise, you don't have instability. And let me give you just for typical parameters, you can estimate this theta critical, and this is something which we have done numerically. So theta critical is something for these parameters I discussed. It's something like 53 degrees, and at the same time, if you have for the same parameters when you estimate theta, which I introduced before, it is a proportional to m naught square mu square, it is definitely larger than that. So I would say for the typical parameters in the typical situation, you do have such kind of instability. So theta in our real life definitely larger than critical theta critical. So K condensation does occur in the core of the K strings. Let me show some pictures. So what?
You had F pi in that.
Yeah, essentially, the way how I used exactly the f pi from large mu. So I didn't use any instanton calculations. I used just the old pi, which I know. But nevertheless, because it is an analytical formula, you can just substitute any parameters you want to see actually what happens.
Did you already explain how the when mu equals mv it unwinds?
Oh, I didn't explain, but let me explain actually just right here. Okay, first let me show the picture. So essentially what happens when theta is small, nothing happens. You have absolutely stable k naught with a restored symmetry inside. And at some point, what's happening is the following, that k plus condensation occurs inside of the string. And what does it mean? It means the following, that essentially, now I am ready to answer on your question. Yeah. I'm ready to answer on your question. So what's happening is the following. When MD and MU are very, very large, in this case, nothing happens. You have normal K naught string. It's exactly what we discussed. Now, when MD minus MU becomes smaller and smaller, what happens that K plus condensation occurs inside of the core. The size of the core becomes larger and larger because you remember that size is proportional to the bound state energy. So the behavior looks like that. Behavior for the K plus condensation looks like that. E minus MD minus MU. So essentially what's happening is the following, that your core becomes larger and larger. And in this limit, all space is filled by K plus and K naught. So, okay, again, let me just repeat. What I'm saying. When MD is still not M equals MU, in this case, what's happening is the following. That
when
this
MD equals MU, what is theta critical?
Zero, yes. So this is a, yeah, exactly zero. Okay, this is a theta critical, and as you see, the theta critical is definitely zero. Yeah, actually, you can calculate this constant, yeah. But the reason why I presented everything in just an analytical way, actually it's better to calculate numerically everything, but nevertheless I like this analytical expression such that you see what's happening when you change your parameters. Okay. Now the most interesting part. Because essentially what I want to say is the following. That what does it mean K plus condensation inside of the string? It means the following. It is a charged field. K plus is a charged field, which is a condensed inside of the string. And it turns out that exactly this effective Lagrangian I am talking about right now, that essentially you have a non-trivial string with the condensation of a different field inside of the string, have been discussed by Witten many, many years ago, just using some kind of motivation was definitely not QCD, but some kind of cosmological strings. So essentially, QCD at large mu, it is explicit realization of the old Witten's idea about cosmic superconducting strings. So it is just, I didn't fit any parameters, I didn't want to adjust anything, but it so happened that our effective description of QCD at large mu, it's exactly realization of the very old idea.
Large mu and physical quark.
Small MD and mu, yeah, exactly. Our physical situation, when MS more than 60 MeV, it's exactly what Thomas discussed. So it's just our nature with MS relatively large, MD minus MU relatively small, corresponds to the specific situation which Witten discussed. And if you just look at his paper, you find the following, that actually he wrote a very, very complicated Lagrangian in terms of many different Higgs fields, and after that he started to adjust different parameters to have this phenomena. I'm not adjusting any parameters. It so happened that all our parameters in our real life MS larger than 60 MeV, MD minus MU relatively small. We are exactly in this region with this phenomenon to happen. Yeah, at this point I ignore the weak interaction. But nevertheless, oh, okay, because I promised to discuss domain walls, but let me say the following, that if you have K-string and anti-K-string, definitely you have domain wall, and in this case you have to, yeah.
Domain wall attract them, though.
Yeah, they attract them, and in this case, I don't know what's going to happen, because essentially there is an absolute, but nevertheless, if you are talking about some kind of neutron star, in this case, I can demonstrate explicitly that K-strings, the sign, whether it is string or anti-string, is correlated to the angular momentum. So if you have neutron star, and if you are talking about core of the neutron star, you don't have anti-vortices, you have only vortices. In this case, there is no domain wall.
But there is a constant.
Huh? It's hard to believe in what?
Every string has a domain wall coming from it.
Domain wall.
I mean, every string has a domain wall attached to it. And the question is, where do all those domain walls go if not onto any vortices?
Domain walls actually formed if you have string and anti-string. In this case, you do have domain walls.
Even with one string, you have to have a domain wall going on.
What? It is not necessarily formed. What do you mean?
The weak interactions, as you said on your very first.
Yeah, but you have.
Symmetry breaking term. And that explicit symmetry breaking term will mean that every string is the boundary of a wall.
No, okay. Essentially, it does not look like that. So essentially, what you have the following. You definitely have string. It is not exactly axial symmetric string, but it would be some kind of anti-symmetric part would be there. But the main wall is not necessarily there.
Wait. That's not correct.
What do you mean? Okay.
Where's the chalk?
Chalk is just right here.
Yes.
So here's the near the core of your string.
Yes.
You're say winding once around.
Yes.
But the fact that the symmetry is broken explicitly means that I know that at infinity, all the arrows have to point in a certain direction.
Yeah.
There's a long length scale associated with the explicit symmetry breaking, which, and you know that on, if this is your infrared cutoff, which you talked about a minute ago.
Yeah.
I know that once I get this far away from the string, all the arrows have to point this way. And the only way for that to work is if I have a domain wall coming off the string. The way I've drawn it, I guess these arrows will go this way, but this is still pointing here. So along here,
yeah, if you consider just only.
I have to have. Because at infinity, you can't have winding at infinity. At infinity, there's an explicit symmetry breaking term that tells you all the arrows want to point in a certain direction.
Wait a second. what I am saying the following. Why do you want at infinity, all of them point in the same direction?
That's
if you have angular momentum.
That's the explicit symmetry breaking. That's the weak interaction. That's the explicit symmetry breaking.
Okay, it depends definitely on scales. Because essentially, if scale is, for example, baryon charges also could be broken, right? Somehow. what Song discussed. Yeah, not in the standard model. But in this case, essentially, everything depends on specific scales.
Let's leave baryon number unbroken. But I mean,
yeah.
you know this story very well for U1 axial because it's in your papers.
That's absolutely correct. But U1 is actually, the way how I understand the point.
It's the same. It's all that matters is that there's a small explicit symmetry rate.
Yeah,
term,
correct.
For the U1 axial
correct.
Range.
But the way how I understand is the following. If you have strings which actually point in different directions, you definitely know what is going to happen.
Well, every string has a wall attached to it. That's the lesson.
Yeah, it's unfortunate lesson, yeah. Huh?
Your lesson.
Yeah, essentially it is.
Huh? Whether it's unfortunate or not, is it true?
Yeah, what Krishna says, it's absolutely correct. So essentially at infinity, because you have explicit cosine phi, you must have phi in the same direction. Now I am trying to think of the following, that actually if you have phi equals 2 pi, it's exactly the same part. You don't change energy. The way how you present it in a sense that actually if you have two different vacuum states, some spin up and spin down. In this case, I have no doubt, you're absolutely correct. But if phi corresponds exactly to the same point, phi equals 0 and phi equals 2 pi, energy is exactly the same. Exactly. Cosine phi for zero.
Yeah, sure, but that's
right. At infinity, it's exactly the same. So you are not, you can't.
That's the whole point.
You have to be at that point.
Right.
At infinity, you have to be anywhere you want around the base of the
or phi, yeah, you have to be at this point. That's true. Phi equals zero or phi equals 2 pi.
What you're saying, I think, let me ask you if this is correct. You're suggesting in terms of the phi which we see rotating around there, that possibly you could have a symmetry breaking which involves cosine of 2 pi.
Yeah, what I'm saying the following, that essentially,
why are you unhappy?
I'm not saying I'm happy, unhappy. I'm trying to understand the following, that essentially, what is the difference between between local and global strings? Because I know for local strings, such kind of situation does exist. That's for sure.
But these are global strings.
This is a global strings, yeah. Yeah, that's true. So, but, okay, maybe for local strings, phi is not physical and can't be. Okay, let me think about that and just.
If you want hypercharge, hypercharge is a global symmetry.
Yeah, that's true. So just.
Another issue that if it's a local, I'm sorry, if it's a global string, is it not correct that if it were going out all the way to infinity? Never mind the spontaneous symmetry breaking.
Log error just infinity, that's for sure. Yeah, but nevertheless, as
and
you know,
the wall save you from that.
That's true. No, but that at the same time, you definitely know
we
that
we
in
love your walls, Eric. You're trying to abandon your children here.
In helium, you know, log R, it would be infinity, and nevertheless, you know perfectly well. In condensed matter physics, people do actually form such kind of strings. And essentially, this log R, it is some kind of infrared cutoff.
In fact, like before with the U1B string, the log is cut off by the spacing between strings. You form an array.
Yeah,
of them,
exactly.
The
that's absolutely correct. So essentially, the picture which I have in mind, and I don't present here. So essentially, you have global strings, and these global strings, they definitely like in condensed matter physics because they have very, very strong repulsion. They form some kind of lattice.
Yeah,
it always happens, and as you know,
for the U1B string.
It happens for U1B, that's for sure. It does not happen for U1A.
Or for U1Y, they all have walls and they're all going to annihilate with anti-strings.
And if you don't have anti-strings?
Then you'll have a soup of lots of walls.
Yeah, it's exactly the question I'm trying to answer. If you don't have anti-strings,
every one of those walls will nucleate string anti-string loops, and then you'll make anti-strings.
Let's discuss later, but let's assume that you have angular momentum, so you have more strings than anti-strings. What happens?
Yeah,
that's true. But let's assume that you have such a... Yeah, if you slice, but number of strings, for example, more than number of anti-strings.
What do you mean by anti-strings?
Just in the opposite direction. When pi goes not from 0 to 2 pi, but in opposite direction. In this case, you do have the main wall between them. Easily, it's easy to understand.
Well, for a string loop, you don't want to call it an anti-string. I mean, a string loop.
Okay, that's true. But in order to do this, you have to have... You have string, I call this anti-string, and you call this loop,
right.
For sure.
Right.
You can call this...
Loop bounds
and then bounce and it collapse. I agree with that. It's exactly what I discussed for. But what about K if you have strings like that? Yes, it's exactly my point. So essentially, if you have angular momentum, in this case, you have more such strings that opposite directly, directed string. Yeah, they have angular momentum. You remember,
They have hypercharge flying around, but not baryon number.
They don't have baryon number, but nevertheless, they carry angular momentum. I can demonstrate it, and the reason for that is, okay, this is something I can do. They carry angular momentum. Wow. Because you have this mu s effective, which is non-zero, and if you look at the time dependence for the string, and you calculate angular momentum, it is not zero. You have this time dependence. It's exactly what I discussed. Once you have time dependence like that, you do have strings which carry angular momentum. So K strings, they do carry angular momentum. XL strings, they don't. And this is exactly the reason why I'm not just immediately say that all disappear. Some of them, they can be stable because of the angular momentum.
So are you saying here that a double?
Yeah, essentially, not double, many of them in the same, many of them in the same direction.
Where do all their walls go?
Oh, I don't know how to answer this question, but let me think about that. It's exactly, when you discuss domain walls, I immediately.
In a finite size sample.
Huh?
In a finite size sample.
Yeah.
Condensate goes to zero at the edge. So the edge is like an enormous gray core of a string.
Could be.
Right?
Yeah. So it might be domain walls could they go to the
but
edge of
the energetics of this, you can't forget the walls.
No, just the question how you can understand the situation when you have finite number of
they're gonna start bumping into each other though. If you have
but nevertheless they won't just okay, so essentially, just let me discuss just few few interesting things about this K strings. As I mentioned, it is just it so happens that actually Witten discussed very similar phenomena, and the difference actually is the following: that our effective Lagrangian is just essentially QCD effective Lagrangian for large mu, and all coefficients can be calculated at least in principle, and we don't have to adjust any parameters. But nevertheless, just all symmetric properties are such that it is exactly what we discussed, and essentially what I'm going to do, I'm going to use exactly Witten's approach to analyze what kind of strings do you get. Yes, something like. Okay, we discuss this later, but nevertheless, Thomas, just right now it is not clear for me. Let me just finish with the talk and we discuss this. Because essentially, I cannot say yes and I cannot say no. I just discussed one string separately from the environment. So essentially, just a few next transparencies. It's nothing but I follow Witten's paper, and let me say that in this case, you can construct effective Lagrangian for this K string, which is with condensation of K plus in star inside of the string, and you can write down effective Lagrangian with all coefficients which can be calculated. You remember you can calculate K plus and just what I discussed before. And the most important part is the following, that this is effective Lagrangian, and you immediately see that if you have external and Z-independent electric field, in this case you definitely have current. This current is conserved. and the property of two dimensions is such that any conserved current can be written in a very nice way with epsilon symbol. And the reason why I'm talking about that, because in this case, it's immediate. You can immediately see that essentially current is persistent. So essentially, Witten argues as follows, that essentially current, if you have K plus condensation inside of the core, in this case, you have you can introduce additional topological invariant. And this is nothing but d theta dz, and z is a nothing but direction of the string. And at the same time, equation I derived before in terms of gamma is such that essentially current is proportional d theta dz. Therefore, essentially, equation of motion, it is not like in the normal metal, but equation of motion looks like that. So if electric field is applied for some period of time, in this case, you have a current which builds up, and this current remains it's persistent current even if you turn off electric field. And as I again, let me say, the reason for that is just trivial topological argument, because current is proportional d theta dz. So you cannot change integer number to just arbitrarily small unit. Okay, and you can say, where do I get electric field and what Witten says at this point? So essentially, if you have in cosmology or even neutron stars, you have magnetic field. And if you have magnetic field, and you know that in rest frame, you definitely have electric field. And there is a critical maximal current, which string can carry. But the difference is for just what, what again, Krishna discussed in his seminar, that essentially electrical charge is a little bit different. It's not our electric charge, but nevertheless, it's very close to it, CFL phase. Okay, so essentially, this is very close to the end of the story. And so what I wanted to say here, I wanted to present some kind of topological arguments or what kind of topological defects exist. But nevertheless, I didn't discuss any physics which might be related to all the strings and domain walls. But nevertheless, analogy with condensed matter physics actually suggests that such kind of topological defects may play some very important role in dynamics. But, you know, in just because I don't want to finish here without mentioning any applications to the real physics and where this CFL phase can actually be realized. And let me remind you that actually two unusual stars we already discussed here in this room. And let me just make very, very short propaganda on a different stuff. That two seismic events, so CFL phase could be two seismic effects, which actually were registered in 93. And I know about this paper from Vic Teplitz, and just who actually presented his talk in Dark Matter. And let me show these two events, which are very, very unusual in the sense that each earthquake has a actually center. It is a point-like event. And they actually analyzed many, many different events. And this person, actually, Vic Teplitz, is he's essentially he is a professor, but at the same time he has been working for the government for many years, and they actually analyzed. He's from armed control actually agency, so he has many, many different data from many different seismic stations, American and not American. And when they analyzed it, they realized the following: that the two events cannot be matched to point-like defect. This is the first event, and let me show the second event. And when they analyze it, they realize that it's just only line-like event is perfectly matched with what actually they registered in different seismic stations. So the point is the following, and this is exactly what Vic Teplitz says in Dark Matter, that it could be some kind of strangelet nuggets, which Witten discussed again many, many years ago. So it's some kind of strange matter. And they estimated the mass of this object, something like 1 ton. and they estimated the speed because they definitely know the time when an entry time and exit time. It turns out that velocity is exactly 10 to minus 3 c, so it is a virial velocity. It is 1 ton, and what you have shock waves from this event. So essentially, no, as you know, just
why does it make earthquakes?
Because just shock waves only, because it just it, you do not excite internal degrees of freedom. You don't have any. It just it's exactly what Witten discussed. So essentially, yeah. Okay, let me finish and answer that questions as I organize it. So essentially, and we estimated immediately after his talk what would be the flux if it is a dark matter, and it turns out it's just few events per year if it is a mass 1 ton, and just independently I presented talk about some kind of strange matter which is a CFL phase. And let me finish on my talk on the positive note. So essentially what I want to say is that quark dense matter could be much more common state of matter on the scale of the universe than the normal hadronic scale we love. Okay, thank you. By what?
Ocean shock wave.
It's normal shock waves. So essentially it is
these are little size, it's micro earthquakes.
But essentially, the way how they usually when you have point-like seismic event, some kind of earthquake, you know that you know exactly there is a station here, there is a station and everywhere, and you definitely know essentially what is the speed of propagation, and just all these people, not only from Department of Defense, but from everywhere, they know exactly what is the propagation property now, Earth. So it is something which had been studied for many, many years. Can you imagine that it is just 1 ton, and at the same size, it's 10 to minus 2 millimeters? Yeah, because essentially it goes through the Earth, and the only what it does, because velocity 10,
It's bumping into it. How is it
bumping? 10 to minus 3 c. Can you imagine velocity 10?
It's bigger than the spacing between atoms. It just bumps into matter. It just plows through matter, breaking chemical bonds.
It's electromagnetic, yeah.
So if there were 2 in 93, where are the next
20? Okay, yeah, it's exactly the question I asked him, and he said something like that. He was able to get this data from Department of Defense from 93, and he was not able to do the same for the next years, but he promised to do so.
I mean, do you know how he gets his 1 ton estimate? Where does the What leads to estimate?
Okay, just we have to, they know energetics a little bit. So essentially they know what is the signal, and they know the relation with what kind of shock wave. So essentially they know.
You can get some estimate of its size, but I can't imagine how you get an estimate of its mass.
Once you have estimate for the size, you immediately know if you assume, and they assume that it is a dense.
Oh, I see.
It is a dense quark.
Really have an estimate of its size.
Yeah, essentially yes, because once they know estimate of the size, you know exactly what is the density in our Earth. You know exactly actually what is the energy released and what kind of shock wave you. Charge is it's neutral, zero. Just what do you mean?
It's just physically. It's just.
No, yeah, no, it is a CFL phase, UDS.
Tissue paper, and I punch my fist through it.
So just as I said, I have some kind of ideas how such kind of objects can be formed, but this is a subject for a different talk.
But the thing that I don't understand is if you read their paper, which I have, they start with several hundred thousand seismic events.
Yes. Correct.
They then do a data analysis and conclude that, you know, there were two cases where the seismic events look like they're arranged in a line. And I mean, what are the what
I mean, someone needs to do a Monte Carlo analysis, right? Someone needs to take random data, 100,000 random events, and ask what the probability of, in those 100,000 events, two of them looking like this is. And no such analysis was presented. There was, in the paper anyway, there was no statement of what's the probability that this could have happened just by random chance. And I mean, we need a seismologist to, I mean, I think probably if we had a seismologist in the room.
We could ask from the
question. No, a seismologist would have a gut instinct, you know. We need the reaction from seismologists to this paper, not from physicists.
You know, all these guys, they actually do seismology. The only one guy who does particle physics is this one. And the professional seismology people, and they know what...
Okay, let me take other questions. And let me give the microphone back to Eric here. I don't want to be...
I think...
This question for you.
Now, if this really were stable stuff, and in fact so stable that it cannot through the earth and bump into things, it doesn't transfer the rest of the ordinary form, it would be very hard to understand how that could be consistent if it's not being on the crust.
I think there's from a theoretical point of view, if you ignore astrophysics observations, there's two logical possibilities. There's nuclear matter is more stable than quark matter at zero pressure. And then there's Witten's suggestion that maybe at zero pressure, nuclear matter is metastable and quark matter is actually more stable. And if you accept that, if strangelets exist plowing through the Earth and bumping into things, then it means that they are in fact stable with respect to nuclear matter. Presumably, by the way, as it plowed through the Earth, it picked up a few nuclei, it gained a little bit of mass, right? But if that's the case, then it's very hard to imagine how you can have an ordinary neutron star. Because if there are these things flying about the place, if even one of them falls onto an ordinary neutron star and ends up in its middle, the Earth is not dense enough to stop these things, but a neutron star would. And if one of these things ends up in a neutron star, it will seed the conversion of that ordinary neutron star into a quark star. And if there are two of them hitting the Earth every year, there shouldn't be any neutron stars in the universe. All neutron stars should.
If you assume that this is exactly.
Yeah. If we take Teplitz's suggestion seriously, Teplitz's suggestion, if two of them are hitting the Earth every year, there are no neutron stars in the universe. All neutron stars are quark stars.
Not necessarily true. You have an assumption that you have standard strange light. But there are, it could be different, something what I discussed, for example. In this case, you cannot make a picture of large size, right? But this is different.
Well, okay. But it, and I would, to finish my sentence, you then go ask the astrophysicists, could it be that all the things that we've been called, all the pulsars we observe, could they actually be quark stars? And they say no for a whole host of reasons. I mean, some of which you mentioned, others of which, anyway, there's a whole host of reasons which we could talk about. But I think actually long ago, Uli had a question at the very beginning. Okay. So.
Electric charge?
Electron.
Oh, electron. Sure. But it is just different scale. I'm not talking about atomic scale 10 to minus 8. I'm talking about scale delta.
Well, you talk about
no, if you
now
just
this is a question for you. So here you go.
Yeah, if you discuss just core, in this sense, the size of the core, it's roughly speaking, it is a delta size, or anyhow MeV size, and definitely not EV. And when you discuss electrons, you are talking about electron volts. So it's. But
The question is, where do they sit? Just they sit exactly in the core? No, no, they cannot sit on the size delta minus 1. They sit on the size 10 to minus 8 centimeter. So.
Well, that's not so obvious for electrons.
Why?
They would be magnetically interacting with
this. Sure, but what is the size of the electromagnet?
No, 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 no. The point is there is going to be a natural bound state, I think, for electrons.
Correct.
In the presence of this.
Correct. But what is the bound size, bound state size? 10 to minus 8 centimeters. It's just the only size I know, it is the atomic size when you are talking about electrons.
No, no,
if it is a relativistic, it could be 10 to minus, Compton 10 to minus 11. And I'm talking about 10 to minus 13 in all cases.
Yes. Well,
MD. Yeah, so essentially, just the way how I understand such kind of phenomena, it's definitely you have a core with K plus condensation. Electrons are definitely there, just they cannot disappear. But nevertheless, just the scale is different.
But the crucial thing would be if this object has a magnetic
flux. Yeah, if you have, let's say, closed string in this case, for sure you have, so it's so-called Wharton. Electric.
Yeah. And is there a magnetic flux down this tube also?
Along the tube or perpendicular?
Along.
No, along, no. Essentially, you can organize so-called Wharton. So essentially, just closed string. In this case, you have current.
Oh, sure.
And definitely, you have magnetic flux.
No,
and
thing,
no.
No magnetic flux.
The way how I construct it, no.
Okay. Then
no, electrons are there, but they are on a different scales.
Not specifically attached.
Not specifically attached. But nevertheless, they do interact with K plus string. For sure, there is a Coulomb interaction. But the scale for this electron, for this Coulomb interaction, 10 to minus 8, if it is non-relativistic situation. So just so they are there, but on a different scale.
But by the way, I mean, in terms of astrophysical consequences of the, I mean, you talked about the strings which are more interesting from a field theoretic point of view.
Yeah.
But the ones which are more interesting to the astrophysicists are the U1B strings.
U1B, because, I agree.
I mean, as you said, they're similar to helium, so you dismiss them. But at least we know they're there.
Yeah. For sure. But you know, I cannot speak twice on the same subject, and I already discussed U1B string somewhere else.
But the point is that none of the other ones are topologically stable. They're only metastable. They'll go away.
Just let's discuss about K strings separately. I agree that U1A, for sure, you're absolutely correct. They are metastable, they are going away, and they may play some dynamical role
in
somewhere. At the very beginning, they may play some role, but definitely they are not there at the moment. But at the same time, for me, it's not clear what...
The U1B strings are there.
They're there, for sure. And they definitely form lattice. They definitely, we calculated, actually, repulsion forces between them, the normal global strings,
Tony?
We know repulsion, we know everything.
Tony, do you want to come to dinner?
Are you coming to dinner?
No.
Okay, before anyone